G'day, my name is Anthony Patch, and this is another edition of Pulse. We are examining some of the geopolitical issues of the day, and today we'll be reviewing in brief the latest out of Israel and Ukraine. Today is the 25th of September of 2024. I'd like to begin with Ukraine. Vladimir Zelensky addressed the United Nations General Assembly today, and part of what he was delivering was his plan for victory. Now, tomorrow he is scheduled to meet with U.S. President Biden to formally deliver his plan for victory or victory plan. This involves primarily permission to be granted to both specialist troops, technicians, if you will, from the United Kingdom, and also likewise the United States. For the United Kingdom's part, permission to access the targeting data provided by the United States by way of encrypted satellite transmissions to the ground troops to be entered into the Storm Shadow long-range missiles from the United Kingdom, and likewise from the United States, the Army Tactical Missile Systems, ATCAMS. This has been the central issue, not only in the past several weeks, but really this extends all the way back to 2021, and President Biden's promise at the time to Vladimir Putin that the United States, NATO in general, but specifically the United States at the time, would not deploy long-range missiles in Ukraine targeting Russia. Well, of course, that was summarily violated in early 2022, January, February 2022, when these missile systems were delivered into Ukraine. They are there, they are staffed, they are manned, they are ready. They just require the targeting information, which requires the permission of the United States military by way of the president, the commander-in-chief. On Friday the 13th, well, I should start with Thursday the 12th of this month, Anthony Blinken carried the message to the president that all preparations had been made to provide this information to the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Starmer, who was set to deliver to Biden those targets, those specific predetermined targets in Russia that the United Kingdom wanted permission to strike on behalf of Ukraine, as well as U.S. Army tactical missile systems to be employed to likewise target in Russia, deeper into Russia. Literally, this was down to basically the 11th hour, so to speak, on Friday the 13th, and Blinken, the State Department, was overridden by warnings that were delivered by the Pentagon, officials from the Pentagon, warning the president. The Pentagon is essentially delivering their message to Sullivan, to Jake Sullivan, warning of the response that was warned, delivered by not only Putin, but Lavrov and others from Russia on Thursday and on Friday, that should permission be granted, Russia would respond appropriately. And that's where we're headed today, is the discussion of what might Russia do, because the permission was denied on Friday the 13th, which angered President Biden that he had to change his mind, that they had to believe that Russia was not bluffing, and that if things spun out of control, this could lead to a nuclear exchange, not just in Ukraine and Europe, but also the continental United States. That situation has not gone away, and that's the reason for my pulse reporting today. The cat's kind of out of the bag in terms of Zelensky's delivery of his victory plan. Pretty much everybody knows that this entails permission for the use of long-range targeting of these Storm Shadow and ATACMS precision guided missiles. Now, these won't reach Moscow. They won't reach St. Petersburg, but they will reach military targets, strategic targets in Russia. With Zelensky scheduled to meet with the president tomorrow, I'll fast forward through this. It is my expectation, as I often characterize my statements, it is my expectation that permission will be granted this time, because additional preparations by way of NATO, the United States, to a minimal extent, Ukraine, further preparations have been made should Russia retaliate. My expectation is that perhaps, and I underscore perhaps, perhaps as early as this weekend, we may see the Army tactical missile systems and the Storm Shadows launching on Russia. Putin and others in Russia have made it very clear that conventionally, using conventional high explosives on hypersonic missiles, these are missiles that are capable of flying upwards of 25 times the speed of sound. There's no anti-missile defense system on the planet that can intercept large numbers of hypersonics. They may be able to, with a degree of luck, strike one or two, but essentially they fly beyond the ability for missile systems to react. Russia has said, Putin has said, that they would use conventional high explosives on hypersonics to strike multiple targets in Ukraine, that they would strike into Europe those countries that have been supplying and equipping those missile systems and other military support to Ukraine. And if the United States responds to Russia's response, if the United States chose even conventional warheads on missiles as a response, so let's look at the sequence. The U.S. provides targeting info by way of satellites. This is fully encrypted guidance and targeting information. The U.S., by way of Ukraine, launches the missiles using U.S. and United Kingdom troops to do this. Russia responds with hypersonics with conventional warheads. Then the United States responds with additional missiles. And Russia has made it clear that they will presume that wave of missiles will be nuclear tipped. They cannot afford to take the risk of presuming that these missiles are only carrying conventional warheads. They will need to respond as if this second wave of missiles are nuclear tipped missiles. And they will respond with tactical nukes. And in addition, we need to bear in mind that Russian submarines sit off both coasts of the United States, and they are equipped with nuclear-tipped ballistic missiles, which means that should those be launched off the coasts of the United States, there would be little to no advanced detection, thus warning, of those launches and the impacts. What was delivered back on Friday the 13th and Thursday the 12th of this month to the Pentagon through back channels from Russia, through the intelligence services and the military, the back channels, was a list of targets, targets in the United States. These targets were primarily the manufacturing sites for these missile systems, as well as, I'm sure, Washington, D.C., New York City, probably Silicon Valley, Seattle, Los Angeles, but certainly the manufacturing sites for military armaments were of primary concern to the Russians. And these targets were delivered, and this is what prevented permission being granted, and that permission withdrawn on the 13th, Friday the 13th. Now, I don't know what additional preparations have been made, but again, I'll repeat, my expectation is that these missiles will be launched by the United States, the United Kingdom, out of Ukraine, perhaps, this weekend. What sort of response can we expect? Well, certainly it would be a conventional missile response by Russia. Will it spin out of control to tactical nukes and the like? Russia has made it very clear they do not want to use nuclear weapons. They understand the price that Russia will pay in addition to the rest of the world. They've also made it very clear that they can accomplish all of their military objectives, including the targets in the United States, targets that were delivered, using only conventional warheads, including the submarines. You see, the United States and Russia have precision ballistic missiles on submarines that are both nuclear tipped and conventional warhead tipped. So my expectation regarding the missiles employed by Russia from submarines will be conventional warheads. Again, much as the Russians reading the second wave of missiles launched by the United States, presuming that they would be tactical nukes, the United States would have to presume that anything that is launched by Russian submarines to likewise be nuclear tipped. So, it's a dire situation that we find ourselves in right now. The incursion, the invasion of Russia in the Kursk region by Ukrainian forces, the very minimal supply line that still exists from Ukraine into the Kursk region. Yesterday, the reports came out yesterday that Russia is now rapidly closing what is described as the neck, cutting off the supply line between Ukraine and Russia for the troops that still remain. Some 12,000 Ukrainian troops have already been killed in the Kursk region. There are some 6,000 to 7,000 remaining, and those are about to be wiped out. Lastly, with Ukraine, Zelensky, and I'll read the report here from online, Zelensky reported in his address to the United Nations today that Russia is planning attacks on Ukrainian nuclear power plants. Zelensky is warning. Zelensky said that radiation does not respect state borders. He said Russia can't defeat our people's resistance on the battlefield, and said that Putin is looking for other ways to break the Ukrainian spirit. For a third winter, Russia is stepping up its strikes on Ukraine's energy grid in a bid to plunge the country into the dark and cold, Zelensky said. Okay, so I'm just reporting here, I'm not taking sides. 80%, Zelensky states, 80% of the Ukraine's energy system has been disabled by Russia. Okay, that just came out today. We're moving towards winter. Another expectation on my part, I said this in the last Pulse video, that there will be a mass migration, a fleeing of Ukrainians from Ukraine into Europe. It may come because of military actions. It may come if Russia indeed strikes nuclear power plants in Ukraine. It may be because of their anticipation of winter. It's already getting cold in Ukraine. Nonetheless, I think Europe should expect several million Ukrainians to exit the country for humanitarian reasons. Okay? So this takes us over to Israel. As you know, earlier this week on Monday, there were pagers and then the following day, handheld radios that exploded upon receipt of a radio transmission. Multiples of people were killed. Many more were injured. And psychologically, this has been quite a blow to Hezbollah and the Lebanese people. Israel had already been moving from the Gaza area a brigade of troops. This was the 98th Elite Brigade, had already been moving from Gaza towards the northern border of Israel, bordering Lebanon. In preparation for this movement, the Israelis have been pounding over the last couple of days, pounding Lebanese civilian villages and towns, and so far have killed over 500 civilians, Lebanese civilians, in this assault. I think you would agree that, like Ukraine, Ukraine's military is virtually decimated. The IDF, with all of the nearly 1 year assault on Gaza, is pretty well exhausted. The ability for the IDF to actually mount a ground assault into the border region of Lebanon, and as the stated objective by Netanyahu, to push Hezbollah entirely north of the Latani River, which is supposed to be the borderline that was agreed upon after the 2006 war between Israel and Hezbollah. This was a United Nations brokered peace agreement between Hezbollah and Israel in 2006 that the Latani River would be the border that Hezbollah was required to respect and would not deploy itself south of the Latani River. Well, of course, Hezbollah has never abided by that. This has been the point of contention by Israel, that they have violated this agreement. And there are many, many other reasons why Israel is at war with Hezbollah, and Hezbollah has their reasons regarding Israel. Again, I'm not taking sides here. Israel has said that they intend to relocate some 60,000 Israelis that were displaced from their northern villages and towns along the Lebanese border. And it is their intent to create north of the border what the IDF has openly described as a kill zone. In other words, a buffer north of the border, devoid of any people, Israeli or Lebanese. And that should the IDF patrolling that zone find anyone in that area, they would be shot on sight. These are the words of the IDF. I don't think they're going to accomplish that task. I don't think Israel is capable of mounting sufficient offensive operations to not only push Hezbollah south or north of the border between Israel and Lebanon, to the degree that a kill zone, a buffer zone in Lebanon could even be established, much less push Hezbollah north of the Litani River. What I'm painting a picture of here for you is a picture of desperation. The title of this presentation is Desperate, Israel and Ukraine. I think I've illustrated the problem with Zelensky's desperate situation in Ukraine. Netanyahu, likewise, is desperate. He's getting political pressure from the displaced citizens to be able to reoccupy their homes to the north, some 60,000 people. Last week, there were hundreds of thousands of people in Israel demonstrating against Netanyahu. So there's clearly a political division. There is also the legal quagmire that Netanyahu finds himself in. He's up on charges, both internal to Israel and also the international criminal court system. So he is extending the war, perpetuating the war, expanding the war to a regional war in an effort to remain in power and to avoid prosecution and incarceration. So he is desperate at a personal level. Personally, I think the man is suicidal. He wants to provoke Iran into responding in defense of Hezbollah. In provoking Iran, he is attempting to draw the United States into this conflict. This presents a problem from a military standpoint for the U.S. because the stockpiles of ammunition, armaments, even missiles, as I mentioned, the Storm Shadow from the United Kingdom, the Army Tactical Missile Systems from the U.S. are in short supply. And there's no ability on the manufacturing side to gear up, to spin up, to increase, to create a surge of production of these systems. These missiles take upwards of a year for each one of them to be manufactured. So that creates a desperate situation in the Ukraine because the United States is running out of supplies. There's some $73 million and additional ammunition and so forth that is another tranche, as it's known, that has just been announced by President Biden yesterday in addressing the United Nations, another tranche of military and financial support that's going to Ukraine. But the United States is running low. And their ability to fight a two-front war with respect to Russia and Hezbollah and possibly Iran in support of Israel, that capacity is dwindling rapidly. I'll give you another expectation. It would not surprise me if the United States finds itself having to make a choice between either supporting Ukraine in its efforts against Russia or supporting Israel in its efforts to establish, to promote a broader regional war. From my layman's perspective, a very humble expectation or projection, I think the choice the United States would make is to severely curtail the support of Israel on the part of the United States, devoting most of its military and financial support to Ukraine. I say that because there's an election coming up, presidential election in the United States on November 5th. This administration wants to claim victory over Russia before November 5th, more so than any claim of victory in supporting Israel. I think the United States, the administration views the Israeli problem as a longer term problem than the problem that exists in Ukraine. And therefore, I think they will begin to withdraw more of the naval assets that are deployed. And one of the aircraft carrier groups, the Teddy Roosevelt, has already been withdrawn, is already moving out of the Middle East, out of the Persian Gulf. But it should be understood from a military standpoint that naval assets are obsolete. With the advent of precision-guided missiles, cruise missiles, even drones, changes the dynamics of warfare, naval warfare, rendering all naval assets as very fragile, very vulnerable to these weapons systems. And thus it would make sense that the military would make the decision to withdraw from the Middle East most, if not all, of our naval assets, which includes our air assets by way of aircraft carriers. So I'm watching, I'm paying attention, and I'll report on those movements as they develop. So my last point here that I'd like to share with you tonight is concerning Damascus. And this is where I'd like to invite you to join us through anthonypatch.com, whereby for over 4 years now, we have produced 3 times a week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sundays. We provide 2-hour live streams 3 times a week. We've produced nearly 900 live streams that you would have full access to that archive of live streams over the last 4 years, as well as access to our monthly magazine, Entangled is the title of it, Entangled Magazine, that we've been publishing every month since June of 2017, and you would have access to the full archives. So if you go to anthonypatch.com, there's more information there about how you can join with us and subscribe, where I'm more at liberty to speak from a biblical perspective on the events of today, on the science and technology of today, of the economics of today, of the geopolitics of today. And I, in a private live stream forum, this is our own streaming service, we are at liberty to express our opinions, our analysis, and our expectations. Because here on YouTube, we abide by YouTube's community standards. So I'm not at liberty to share a lot of my biblical perspective that I would like to share with you here, but we are, again, politely abiding by their rules. So with that understood, I want to, from a biblical perspective, recommend that you go to the Bible and read about Damascus. Okay, I'm not going to cite prophecy here. I'm just going to say, do your own reading of Scripture regarding Damascus. What I'd like to share with you from a, let's say from a military perspective, is that the Assad regime, several years ago, completed construction of a deep underground facility beneath the streets of Damascus. This facility is 7 stories underground. This is all public information. It is described as a city such that vehicles, automobiles, and trucks can freely drive underground, operate underground, and that contained within this deep underground bunker system is a command and control system, not only for the Syrian army, but for Hezbollah and Iran. There are research and development facilities for advanced missile systems, for chemical and biological weapons systems. It is equipped with blast doors and biological and chemical doors that are able to seal these agents should they be released from their storage containers. With that information in hand, I think you will find the description of Damascus in the Bible to be very revealing of the days that we are in. If you really want to get a handle on what is happening in the world, why it's happening the way it is, and where the world is headed, I would recommend reading the Bible. Do your research in the Bible. And we will guide you through that through our private live streams that you can access through anthonypatch.com. I thank you for your time. We often like to say to our supporters, our audience, again, from a biblical perspective, we do not operate by a spirit of fear. What I've been reporting to you over the course of all these Pulse videos and what we present in our live streams is not for the purpose of promoting fear, generating fear. It is to make people aware of what is going on, why it's going on, and where it's headed, at least from our perspective. Thank you for your time and attention. God bless you all.